in and get them out.
Here we go.
All right.
Don Allen in Studio B, and my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards in Studio A. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing this fine, snowy Saturday afternoon?
Oh, really good, Don. It's just like the wintertime in Minnesota,
if you will.
Getting a little feedback on my voice there.
Okay.
What do we got? I understand we have callers holding already. What's the background here, Don?
Yes, we do. You know, as I said, you know, Mr. Edwards, in our production meeting, I go through the city council committee actions from the city attorney's office, and again, for last few weeks in a row, we find some settlements to individuals, black males, from the city of Minneapolis for police violence. And here we have in the case of Mr. Malcolm LeBlanc. Malcolm LeBlanc was arrested on September 8th. This is 2006 by Minneapolis police officers. He claims that the officers used excessive force in violation of the United States Constitution. And the officers deny excessive force was used, stating it was reasonable and justified. Well, he just walked away with $45,000.
Okay.
And the second one here is Mr. Darrell Williams, who alleges that police officer Mark Duran used excessive force against him and battered him on July 5th, 2009, and was paid a sum of $24,500. And last but not least, the police are just shooting pit bulls in the neighbor's yard. Plaintiff Patricia Knapp alleged that a police officer wrongfully shot her dog while preparing to execute an arrest warrant at the adjacent property on February 26, 2010, the plaintiff claimed the dog was no threat to the officer and was wrongly shot, and they gave her $1,500, which I gather was the value of the puppy. And and so now we have an escalating, and we'll get further into this, but we have an escalating, again, amount of police brutality against African-American youth. And we just happen to have on the line Ms. Toya Smith and her son, who was just kind of beat up, roughed up on 38th in Chicago and South Minneapolis. Ms. Smith, welcome to On Point.
Hello.
Hello. Why don't you give us a little background on what happened?
Well, doing that, it starts back the end of October when he tried to, one of the officers tried to take my son to jail for a pack of cigarettes, being the fact that he wasn't quite 18 yet. And I came there and, you know, I let him know that he couldn't do that. We got into it about that. Now my son just turned 18. So once he seen my son, he came up and started harassing him. And from there, he roughly grabbed him up, snatched him down, and threw his arm up like he was trying to break his arm, and then arrested him.
Okay. And what, you know the officer's name?
It was Officer Seidel.
Okay, all right. And how is your son doing now?
He's fine now.
I mean, what,
he's sore besides that.
I mean, for full disclosure, I mean, why was he harassing your son? I mean, was there something going on? Was there nothing going on. Okay.
He had just got out of school at 2:30. He goes to school inside of the Sabathany Community Center. He walked up to 38th in Chicago to get some food. He was waiting outside while his friend that he was with went in to get their food, came back out. By the time the friend came back out, gave him the food, then he comes around the corner and everything happened.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mr. Edwards, any questions?
No, not really, other than was he given a citation? Was he charged with anything?
They charged him with loitering. So he went
loitering
to jail for loitering.
In front of a convenience store?
Yes.
Right, okay. And the officer, well, of course, the officer will have to indicate how long your son was on the premises. I mean, you know, there are different definitions that the court has said defines loitering. Most time when you talk about loitering, you're talking about someone being around an area for 25, 30, 40 minutes, a couple hours, and et cetera. Doesn't seem like your son had very much time to loiter. That
right.
may be something you may want to make sure is asked by your attorney. You probably, if you want to stop this and you want to deal with the events of yesterday, you're probably going to have to acquire legal counsel because I no longer recommend people to go to the Civilian Review Authority or Internal Affairs. That's just basically a waste of time. You may be able to get the federal authorities to ask to open a case file and have the FBI investigate, but that doesn't seem to work very well anymore up here either. So, you know, as Mr. Allen just reported, some of these latest payouts, your best bet may be to see if you can find an attorney who's interested in taking the case, initiating a lawsuit. But in asking for damages, you've got to make it worthwhile to the lawyer so that he, you know, pursues the case with passion. What happens far too often in this country is that attorneys basically don't have the passion to follow a case, to pursue a
right.
case, if you will, to stay engaged. And so you're going to have to do that. But if you don't do that, I'm afraid this pattern will continue. But I'm attempting to give you what is a constitutional question that far too many people of color are not told about, and that is what kind. And if you know, if you've got your pencil, I suggest you write it down, so you can always call this program up on demand, and Mr. Allen will help you with that. You need to raise the constitutional and legal question: what constitutes loitering within a time frame? Okay.
Okay.
Because I can say to you, if I'm a police officer and I decide that I just want to harass you or whip your behind, I can say that the point in time that you walk from point A to point B, in other words, across the street, I can say that you're loitering. And that's what's getting ready to happen with the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Minnesota, all that, if too many people of color become involved. So I would strongly suggest, Ms. Smith, that one of the things you want to say to an attorney, because some attorneys like to take on cases that have constitutional implications. And I know for a fact that this is an issue that has not been pursued as it should be. The Supreme Court has talked about it over the last 20 years. Black folk are not made aware of this, but the question needs to be asked, what constitutes loitering and what is the timeline that constitutes a violation of the ordinance? You can't get me for loitering if I've only been standing there 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. You understand what I'm saying to you, Ms. Smith?
Yes. Yeah.
You cannot say that I've loitered, okay? And what people don't know, there is what is called case law that exists, in which the courts have ruled, they have required the jurisdictions to indicate, well, under your policy, under your ordinance, what constitutes loitering. And then when you talk in terms of what constitutes loitering, you have to have incorporated in that what is called the timeline. And as I said, I'll repeat myself again. You cannot be charged with loitering if you're walking from point A to point B and you stop for a couple of minutes. Okay. Also, on the issue of loitering, there basically has to be a previous warning. Now, because your son has had some run-ins with them, they may try to go for that, but that has to be documented by them. So, in other words, they have to have a case file on him. Okay?
Okay.
So, Mr. Allen, Ms. Smith, that would be my observation as a longtime veteran of these kinds of things and as a former vice chair of the Department of Justice's Police Community Relations Council.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Edwards. And, Ms. Smith, we thank you for calling in. I want you to call back in a couple weeks and give us an update on how you're doing. But, you know, you have my number. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, interesting. And for the, you know, our African-American listeners, and particularly any young African-Americans, this may be something you may want to talk about in your vineyard there at MTCC, Mr. Allen. young African Americans, they can't contest it on the street. You'll get your behind whipped. But they need to start asking the question of the academicians on this issue of loitering and trespassing and et cetera. Now, trespassing, of course, is different than loitering. But even in the case of trespassing, as you and I know, there must be a prior declaration against your franchise. Oops, you know, talking like the white folks done taught me how to talk. But anyways, there must be a prior warning as it pertains to trespassing. Now, in the case of loitering, it is one of the most abused tactics by the police when they decide that they want to mess with you. And far too many African-Americans, well, let me say that disproportionately, far too many African Americans are the target of the loitering. Move on. And then if a decision is made to do something to you, it's that you were loitering. Now, based on what Ms. Smith said, I just would maintain there was not enough time for him to loiter. By the way, there are all kinds of security cameras there at 38th and Chicago. Oops. And so the activities, including his walking up and et cetera, are all on tape.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was telling her. And so she did try to get a tape last night, from what I understand, from the Super America, but they said it was the city's camera. And so she will actively try to get a lawyer, from what I understand. She was talking about Mr. Albert Goins, and we'll see what happens with that.
Well, Albert Goins has a history of experience with this. He handled the Carl Eller debacle, and he's handled some others, and he certainly knows his way around both the state and federal courtrooms, if you will. But that would be the best thing for her to do.
Yeah.
Anything else? What else we got? Yeah, interesting.
Well, I need to...
Continues in Minneapolis.
I need to back up a minute, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, I attended the Minneapolis Public School Board this week, Tuesday, and a lot of interesting things came out of that. And I also remember last week we talked a little bit about that Community Standards Initiative Program, CSI Minneapolis, and we're kind of curious about what the funding and who received the money and what's going on, what were the details of that. And it's very interesting because on Tuesday night, I had ran into the communications director and Mr. Dan Down Low Lowenstein and a couple other folks there. And I told him, I said, you know what, I put in a data request on November 19th. If I don't get this information, I am pushed to go to the Attorney General's office and file a formal complaint, bottom line. And so, lo and behold, Wednesday morning, I woke up and I had all the questions that I asked mm-hmm. by a guy named Scott Weber, who is their new administrator for data quality for the Minneapolis Public Schools. And Mr. Edwards, I find this very interesting because I ended up forwarding a copy of these questions and answers to the Star and Tribune. And for the first time ever, education writer Corey Mitchell sent me an email back and says, I need to see the contract on this. So he's actually going to inquire about this. But if I can, Mr. Edwards, I want to briefly just kind of skim through this and get the high.
Sure, go right in, Doc.
Okay. I asked, was the funding approved for the $200,000, or more? If not, how much? And they said funding was approved for $15,000. That was Scott Weber's answer on this Community Standards Initiative, Minneapolis.
The funding was approved for how much now?
He said funding was approved for up to $15,000.
Oh, okay.
That's what he said. I said, when did the board, the Minneapolis Public School Board, approve this project and funding? Please include who voted yes and who voted no. And he said on September 27th, the board approved it unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in September. Okay, please supply a copy or qualifications for the principals of CSI Minneapolis. He said the contract is under New Bethel Baptist Church. Reverend Clarence Hightower is known for his service to the community and served as the president and CEO of the Minneapolis Urban League and Minsky Board of Directors, trustees. And I said, okay.
Well, but Reverend Hightower is fully employed now, isn't he? Not the executive director of the Ramsey Washington County Cap Agency?
Yeah, he is, but I don't think.
Oh, okay. They kind of left that out, huh?
He left that out. Yes, he did.
Yeah, okay.
This is the very interesting part. I said, please provide an outline of this program. Okay?
Uh-huh.
It says, A, deliverables for the six-month planning phase of CSI Minneapolis include officially garner the support and participation of community partners. B, elicit the support of parents and community members. Now, in point B, they're already having problems, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but we'll go down to C, design and launch a CSI Minneapolis website. Okay? D, engage community agencies and organizations in signed partnership agreements. E, elicit the support and participation of 50 area businesses and retail outlets for the provision of incentives for young people who are part of the Positive Behavior Incentive Program. Make contact with representatives from all 87 Minneapolis neighborhoods, informing neighborhood organizations and groups of the initiative and garner their support.
Uh-huh.
F, let me go down there. Raise monetary and in-kind contributions for the 2012-2013 operating program budget. G, develop and convene a CSI Minneapolis steering committee to be seated by February 2012. Report progress and milestones to community partners on a monthly basis. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I didn't go over that list from actually Roman numeral 1 to Roman numeral 9 because there has been no website. There has not been a support and participation of 50 area businesses. They have not made contact with 87 Minneapolis neighborhood groups, because I know 10 neighborhood groups that won't have anything to do with the principals. And so that's find that very interesting. So then again, I asked, who is the fiduciary agent? Again, New Bethel Missionary Baptist Church, which is Clarence Hightower. And who are the principals for CSI, and have they been drug tested per Minneapolis Public School policy? The partnership is with, of course, MPRB and Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, New Bethel, Alfred Flowers, and Lissa Jones, or commonly known as Lissa Lofgren. And B, drug testing information is private data. That's what he said. And then he said, goes on to say, thank you very much and all this other stuff. But what I understand is, not one press release was distributed to the mainstream media. Not $1 spent on promotion in the Minnesota Spokesman Quarter, Insight News, KMOJ, or the mainstream media. Exactly how is the community to find out about this program? Now, the Minneapolis Public School Board, Mr. Edwards, voted unanimously to approve this contract. But after a conversation I had with Director Mammon, who stated, and I quote, I've never seen the contract. I don't think anyone has. So, overall, I find that very interesting and very shocking. And also at the school board meeting, there was kind of a rash of things going on regarding also the Henry High School coach. And I recorded a couple of minutes of that, Mr. Edwards, and I'd like to play that to kind of get a better picture.
No, go right here.
My name is Helen Williams. On behalf of French and Colicia, who could not be here today, she asked me to read this letter to the board. To the Superintendent Bernadette Johnson and board, I am very disturbed this evening after hearing some information from parents about what has happened to various students at Patrick Henry by way of retaliation around Coach Williams for simply asking questions of why he was let go. I am stern at all of what the students and parents have to say to me. This memo is very hard for me to construct, Ms. Williams, to read for me. I have always been a fair person, as many of you know. I champion justice for all children. I hope what I heard today will pan out to be not the truth, because it will be a very sad day for all of us. Signed, Francine Jacobo.
Thank you.
Tonya
Johnson.
Hi, thank you. My name is Tonya Johnson, actually. I'm here tonight in support of Patrick Henry High School. I did write a letter beginning of November, around about a week or so into November, and I didn't get a response to my letter. It was addressed to Superintendent Johnson, and all of you board members were copied on the letter. And so, basically, I think that you do need to look into issues concerning the termination of Patrick Henry High School's coach, Coach Williams, and also the retaliation that many of the students have been affected by due to the principal. A couple of students have moved and left Patrick Henry High School and will not be returning. And thirdly, I think that you're doing a disservice to taxpayers like me, okay, because my taxpaying dollars go to support Minneapolis Public Schools. And it truly is a waste of money. And the reason why I'm saying that is because we're dealing with it in administration. If you can't even respond to a simple letter.
Amen.
Okay, just a simple one-page letter. I mean, I can see why that you can't respond to any of the other issues going on in our Minneapolis public schools. I am totally disappointed in this current administration, currently, even with all of you school board members, because each of you have a role. Many of you I know because I worked on your campaign. And I'm actually disappointed, okay, because none of you have stepped up to the plate. The only one who did do something right was Director Bates when she was against the administration building being built over here. For what? You can't even handle stuff now. Why do you need a new building to continue to be ineffective? Is not a good reason to build a new school building. So, no, I'm totally disappointed in all of you. And I hope that this resolution, I hope you can resolve the issues at Patrick Henry High School. If not, you're going to see us here every time you meet, and we will be voicing our concerns. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was Ms. Tanya Johnson, who kind of put her foot in their butt a little bit there at the school board meeting. And that was a pretty interesting meeting, to say the least.
Okay, yeah, it sounded like it. The Williams situation has been going on now for a couple of months, certainly as early as far back as the 27th of September, maybe even 2 weeks before that, so it would seem that the district would be able to get a handle on that, and certainly the issue of the district headquarters, because at one point on these programs, you and I talked about the fact that we had been attending a couple of meetings, and then I know I was clearly not provided with any information on the next meetings, and all kinds of meetings have been taking place, and then I know you said to me a couple of days ago that the Hispanic member of the committee, which includes Velma Corvell, your friend Craig Taylor, the head of the St. Paul Human Rights Department, etc., he had said that there was a meeting in January, and this was, I think, one day before the 1st of December. So I was wondering what happened to the meeting in December. The 1200 building is, well, the central headquarters is really completed, per se, as pertains to the exterior. And there's been no African-American participation whatsoever. Corvell and them have signed off and falsified information about that. The leadership, in fact, there was a committee appointed. We talked about that on these programs a year ago, if you remember. A committee was appointed by Mortensen to work in conjunction with the committee appointed by the district to basically say in close quarters that everything was okay and that if people like us on this particular program raised any questions about it, that our statements and accusations were to be dismissed as unreliable and non-factional. Wow. And so my question has always been, what the heck happened to the committee? What happened to the reports? In fact, they couldn't even answer my question of, 7 months ago, why it was they were buying steel for that structure from China as opposed to buying American. You remember that? Remember the Buy American piece? Yeah. So, I can understand what people are saying, but some of these folks should have been saying it at the time that we were bringing it to their attention, and it could have made a difference. The building's completed now. It's done. Yeah. The money's been paid to white contractors. Mortensen has ripped it off and gone on about their business. But hey, if people wanted to log a observation, that's I guess that's fine. That didn't do anything for putting black folk to work. But, yeah, what else, man? What else?
Well, we want to get into some of the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights had their One Minneapolis kind of shindig, dog and pony show. And they have both a bunch of the usual suspects. I guess the Minneapolis Foundation did a report that found racial minorities lag behind whites when it comes to a host of indicators. Now, they didn't have to pay the Minneapolis Foundation to do no report because we already have a disparity report out. We have quite a few reports out. And so why this was done is just amazes me. But the One Minneapolis report says it frustrates and motivates people like Velma Corbell, head of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, which was sponsoring the event or the conference. And so, I mean, I understand, Mr. Edwards, when we know what the problem is. We don't need any more reports. But when you go down to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights or you try to engage the city council members, especially Councilwoman Elizabeth Glidden, about all the shredding of cases that went on down there, they never get back with you. They don't really want to talk to you in public, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. And so, I mean, I don't understand these events. I don't understand why they even have them. And they have Mr. King quoted in there saying, I always tell people that the best social service program in the job in the world is a job. And if that's the case, why hasn't he found any jobs for the people that he's trained? You know, and so
that's
and
a good point. That's a doggone good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did he find any jobs for the people that he said he was going to put on the Twin Stadium 3 years ago? Never did that either. But Ms. Corvell and himself worked together to falsify documentation. And if they want to do their usual thing of they'll challenge us and et cetera, that is one of the pieces of information that was revealed by the former head of investigations for the Civil Rights Department, Mr. Ronald Brandon, who, by the way, actually settled for almost $200,000. The $90,000 piece that the Minneapolis Star Tribune received authorization from the city to report on was not the total sum. There was an additional $110,000 that Mr. Brandon was awarded in mediation, which is a staggering number coming out of mediation. And in the course of that, he pointed out that there had been shredding and that documents had been destroyed, numbers had been forged, books had been cooked, and et cetera. And, you know, there was never any follow-up. I mean, anytime you get a high-ranking official like the director of investigation who is given an immediate $200,000 settlement, you know, normally, you know, the Fourth Estate wants to examine that, but they couldn't afford to. They can't afford to because there's other kinds of consequences. Maybe we'll have a chance to touch on it a little bit later on the program. But, you know, I'm not surprised, and Elizabeth Glidden and the rest of them know it, if you will. In fact, there's a matter pending now in the federal courts in which they've all got themselves in the caught in the nutcracker, if you will. But, you know, that One Minneapolis, all of that BS, if you will, is just that. Black folk are not working. Black folk are not getting access, have not gotten access, will not get access, if you will, to any of the economic dollars. In the meanwhile, Ackerberg, Catalyst, and others are moving ahead with a massive development program, which along Broadway, in which already the discussion is how to make sure that African Americans don't get a piece of the action. And I repeat that again, the Ackerberg Group, Catalyst, if you will, the big white general contractors are in play, if you will. Massive, over $1 billion project will be implemented going from almost Washington Avenue all the way back to the bridge going to North Memorial Hospital.
Wow.
I mean, these folks are putting it together, man. They're going to be making money, and black folk are going to be made to disappear.
Yeah, that's exactly I was fortunate enough to research this report about a place called Overtown, Miami.
Overtown. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Where they ran some highways, 395 through there, and ended up displacing about 10,000 poor black folks in that area.
Yep.
And the area is changed totally. I mean, it's a mecca for, you know, people from the suburbs to drive into Miami, downtown Miami, and not see any poor neighborhoods, not see any poor people, no people. It's just you know, fabulous, I guess, for lack of a better word.
In fact, as an outgrowth of that, there was about 9 years ago, there was a riot in Old Town. African Americans took to the streets there for a couple of nights because they were frustrated and angry that their leadership and the government, both municipal, state, and federal, did nothing to deal with the forced exodus. And by the way, for those that are listening in the chat room or on demand, the city has already indicated to a number of homeowners within the vicinity of Broadway on both the north and south that if one does not vacate those that still own their homes, if they do not agree to sell, the right of eminent domain will come into play. And that's really what's getting ready to happen on Penn Avenue. A month ago, a little less than a month ago, Star Tribune declined to report it. Gary Cunningham, a member of the Metropolitan Council, and the husband of Betsy Hodges on the Minneapolis City Council, voted to send light rail down Penn Avenue, and one of the historical institutions that will be eliminated will be Estes's funeral home, as well as over 100 homes owned by African Americans along Penn Avenue will be demolished. So, hey, you know, but with the kind of leadership that you got in this town, you know, folks, not even, you know, their leadership is not about to do anything about it, and so you got all this frustration, all this domestic violence and every other kind of violence. But what else, Don? What else we got, Mayor?
We know that you, we have the African American Leadership Forum has their formal banquet. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Edwards, I just really need to check that because I'm thinking that was this morning. They had that banquet in Windows on Minnesota down at the IDS Center.
At the very top of the IDS, right there at the top. Looking, in fact, you can look back over out towards North Minneapolis, the area to be gentrified, if you will. Boy, I bet you that was an enjoyable time. Eating top of the line filet mignon.
Oh, yeah.
For breakfast, and you can look back out and think in terms of that you were a part of the renewed genocide against African Americans. Boy, that must have been a very spirited time this morning, if it was this morning. I don't know when it is. I've been hearing about it. I know it was by invitation only, and yeah. I know that there's been a discussion about who would be allowed in and who would not be allowed in.
Yeah, well, actually, Mr. Edwards, I just found it, and it's actually next Saturday, from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. in Windows on Minnesota in the IDS Tower. It's after
right.
Leadership Forum, Our Voices, Our Future.
You know what I would do? I would invite Occupy Minneapolis and all the homeless people to go on up and have a bite to eat next Saturday morning and enjoy the festivities and hear the discussion about their demise. Oops. I mean, because really, that's what it's going to be. Hear the discussion about their demise. I would encourage the Occupy Minnesota group, they need to go on up, invite themselves in, you know what I mean, enjoy the activities and get as much information. You know, it's not often that you can get information about your impending demise. You know what I mean?
No.
So that may be something that they certainly might want to do.
Exactly.
Tomorrow is, so you say, next Saturday
next
from
Saturday,
8 to 1.
From 8 to 1:30 at the IDS Center, downtown Minneapolis, Windows on Minnesota. Windows on Minnesota here. Let me just double check and. Yes, in the IDS Tower, December 10th, Saturday. Join us for African American Leadership Forum 6, which is this.
Okay, and this is basically being written by the powerful Northwest Area Foundation, right?
Yes, Trista Harris at Headwaters.
Oh, well, that's just Trista Harris and that group.
Very Cunningham.
That's a little minor. That's kind of like the toilet stew for the Northwest Area Foundation, that foundation. You know, that's kind of like the toilet stew. But They are positioned. They're always positioned to make it appear that there's that community relationship. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Trista Harris and like I said, Gary Cunningham, who, you know, didn't he just come back from a meeting out there in Washington with the powers to be as the number two man at Northwest Area Foundation?
Well, I didn't hear much about that. I mean, what do you know about that?
My sense is that I think that they may have been a part of it. Maybe I've got it confused with the group of ecumenical leaders who met at the White House yesterday with respect to talking with. I notice I didn't say met with, but talking with President Barack Obama, because of the way the protocol works at the White House, you really don't sit down with the president. He may be in the West Wing. You're ushered into the East Wing. His senior staff people are there, and then he comes in on a conference call. Remember we heard Mayor Archie Ryback tell us that a couple months ago?
Yes.
He pretended that he had a meeting with the president, and Sandra Samuels messed him up and asked about did he say hello on behalf of the Samuels family, and the mayor was caught off guard, and he had to say that he only was able to talk to the president for about 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
10 seconds.
Yeah,
that was captured on video and et cetera. So in case folks get mad at us about that and say it didn't happen, it did. And that's when people finally realize what I've certainly always known about what the protocol is, because there are some of those people, oops, who don't pass the Secret Service's security protocol. Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly.
And that protocol does not allow you to be in personal contact with the president.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than electronically.
and also, I'd like to throw in there, you know, for those, it's kind of stepping to the side a little bit, those, I just want to make a general announcement, kind of a public service announcement. I just want to let people know that Sunday, New Salem Church on 26th and Lindale is Super Sunday at New Salem. Service will be held in their future location at 2507 Bryant Avenue North at 10 a.m. They need
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Read the announcement. My God, is that right? Uh-huh.
They need your financial support. The goal is $50,000. Please come. Be prepared to be blessed. To be blessed and be a blessing. For nothing is impossible.
Okay. Now that address is the address of the church of our current police chief. That was Tim Dolan's church for many years. He was raised there. It was called St. Philip's Catholic Church. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, St. Philip's Catholic Church that's now been closed down by orders of the Archdiocese and the Vatican. You know, one of the things happened with that, and I was kind of wondering how you re-identify your former location as the new Crystal Palace, because there are 600 less seats in St. Philip's than they were in the church at 26th and Lindale.
Yes.
That's quite a reduction, you know what I mean? 600 seats. That's a lot of people who would normally be making an offering that won't be making any offering. Right?
Yeah. No, well, won't be making any offering. They're trying to raise $50,000 tomorrow.
Well, that's consistent with what they were attempting to raise $200,000, because there's, like somebody said, there's something like $750,000 that the bank's going to give them to purchase the church. Now, are they renting, leasing, or buying?
The image is not really clear here, and I would imagine that you can't buy anything until you pay for what you have for. So,
you know, that's a public service announcement.
Yeah.
That's certainly great. Tomorrow, Ecumenical Sunday, if you will. Okay, what else we got, man? We're moving right along, keeping that information flowing, if you will. You know, we forgot to give the phone number, man. We started out with that first caller, and we've been remiss. We haven't given the phone number in case anybody wants to call in or et cetera. I imagine a lot of people are doing a lot of shopping now, getting ready for Christmas. But we still have about 19 minutes left, right?
Yes, we have 19 minutes left. This phone number, the phone number to call in, our lines are open, 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. I had a pretty healthy conversation with a young man downtown today who was talking about immigration and that the immigrants were needed to fill jobs that the blacks didn't want to do. And I thought that was very interesting, because I also told him, I said, hey, we're in a position now where immigrants, undocumented and documented, are in a position to take all the jobs, the food service, the landscaping, the roofing. And this individual is a Hispanic, Latino individual who said that, you know, they've tried to get African-Americans to help them on the roofs, but, you know, they're not going to roof in the wintertime. They're going to, when it gets like this outside, and they're not going to work in the hot
tub. Oh, that's not true. I grow weary of listening to that kind of propaganda. African-Americans who helped build this country without compensation, you know, sometimes the Mexicans and others tend to forget the history of this country as it pertains to slavery. You know, we were the largest non-paid workforce in the history of this country, if you will, even more than our Native American brothers, because it, at least in their situation, it took 150 years of genocide to bring them to heel. But, you know, I get tired of hearing that from these people, if you will. African Americans will take jobs, if you will. You know, clearly there's a reason that, you know, 24% of African Americans overall, and in some cases now 70% of African Americans 18 to 24 years of age are underemployed. I've heard that rhetoric, if you will, for a long time about African Americans won't take the job, African Americans won't work on the roofs, and et cetera. That's hogwash. You know what I'm saying? That's really disingenuous.
Yeah, and I agreed, and I mean, I didn't agree with him on that, but I just said, hey, you know, how can you even let that come out of your mouth? I don't think that's the case. This is African American, Black Minnesotans here have been denied tons of opportunities. It's just like a hateful economic disenfranchisement. It's violence, economic violence, and
yeah,
you didn't understand that, and so.
Or he pretended not to understand it.
Yeah, pretended not to understand. Exactly, Mr. Edwards. And then he went into, hey, you know, it's great for you guys because unemployment rate fell to 8.6%.
Not for African Americans. Again, he's not intelligent in making that kind of statement.
Yeah.
But go ahead. I'm sorry because I just have to respond. I mean, Black America must have its responders, if you will, and just – We are too comfortable sitting around letting people run that kind of garbage back and forth. So, you know, unemployment failed. It failed for white Americans.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because I opened the Star Tribune, our local Johannesburg Times, Mr. Edwards, and they had a big story, big fluff story. Unemployment rate falls to 8.6%, lowest in 2.5 years as hiring improves. But they don't break down that, hey, this has nothing to do with the minority ethnic population in the United States, more importantly, the Black male. And so it was really a very, very skewed story, and I'm really shocked at how they could just keep printing this garbage. Between them and Minnesota Public Radio, I don't know who's the worst. Because they both.
Oh, you're talking about Brent Williams?
Brent Williams, what's his name? Bill Warham, the news director. Carrie Miller in the morning. I mean, you're just listening to that. And it's like they're talking the whole time with a smile. Like, there's nothing wrong here. There's nothing. You know, there's unemployment has dropped. Everybody's happy. And I just, I'm talking about sick of hearing it. I'm just very sick of hearing it.
Yeah. It's a sad commentary. And the one thing that you always can be guaranteed that they will be able to find some Negroes who will immediately fetch themselves over there, be in front of the microphone, and concur with that rhetoric, if you will. Those misrepresentations, if you will, cooking of the numbers and et cetera. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate that these kinds of things are happening. And the white fourth estate aids and abets this kind of rhetoric. Yeah. What else we got, man? Whatever, you know.
Well, you know, yesterday at 5 p.m., I knew at 4, and I did a YouTube video, the chairman of the Republican Party of Minnesota resigned amidst controversy, Mr. Edwards.
Sutton, yeah. What happened to it?
Tony Sutton. Since 2008, them supporting candidates that had no way of winning, like Norm Coleman in 2008, Drew Emmer Tom Emmer, excuse me, in 2010, they've become $560,000 in the hole, with with fines and fees, there's another over $150,000. So the Minnesota GOP has no money. People are working there without taking salaries. They had their state convention today out at Bloomington. I was actually out at the part of the festivities last night at the DoubleTree Hotel Hilton out there in Bloomington off 494, and it was kind of everyone's walking around kind of glum. But again, Mr. Edwards, those folks, they have a long ways to go, because you still seen the rednecks, just the people, they have no clues. They're walking around, we have to have small government. I'm like, okay, I'm having a beer. I don't want to hear that conversation, because that conversation doesn't make any sense when you have unemployment in a certain race or group of people that is over 20%. Okay.
Sure, absolutely.
And to add fuel to the fire, the GOP, one of the GOP candidates for the 5th Congressional District running against Keith Ellison, this guy's name, he's a brother, his name is Chris Fields, who is a Marine from San Diego who's going to come here to save all the black people, said this week at the VFW on Lindale and Lake Street over there that black people in North Minneapolis need to pull up their bootstraps, and we need to cut off entitlements, and they need to get out and work.
Yeah. In fact, you had him on the program here a number of months ago, Don, the same character, same gentleman. If I remember correctly, we had him on there for a brief moment. By the way, the bootstrap expression could be an albatross around your neck. You know, we need to report, you know, Herman Cain has suspended his campaign and has removed himself from the presidential GOP race, and we were a little remiss. We actually should have dealt with that right at the top of the hour. Yeah, Herman Cain has stepped out of the race, and so he used that same statement, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Yep. Well, now here's the thing. It appears that the Republicans, based on what you've said, why Mr. Sutton was forced out, maybe they need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Yeah, they need to do that, and they better watch out, because it looks like Monday is going to be a federal investigation, because the way things that went on, there are rumor. The rumor mill started last night, and it says that someone needs to go to jail.
Is that right? Within the Republican ranks?
Within the Republican
ranks? Yeah, well, that's kind of dangerous for them, because they have a hostile Department of Justice, because you have a Democratic-appointed Attorney General, Eric Holder, and you have a Democratic-appointed U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Mr. Todd Jones. Republicans need to be a little careful on that, and then they don't have any representation at the specific level that they need, and that is both of Minnesota's senators are Democrats, governor's Democratic. They don't have a lot of protection. They better hope that they can knock Barack Obama off next November.
Yeah. I mean,
some of them go to jail. But anyways, yeah, okay. So, well, I know that they can have some fundraisers and et cetera, like they do in the black community, have some fundraisers and et cetera, and recoup that money, right? By the way, on that note, Don, how's the Urban League doing?
The Urban League is whittling away as we speak, Mr. Edwards. I drove by there Friday morning. I think there was like 9 or 12 cars combined in both parking lots. While across the street at the University of Minnesota's UROC facility, you could not get a parking space. Every slot across the street was full. Which leads me to ask, you know, we've been kind of laying off the Minneapolis Urban League for a while, Mr. Edwards, but there seems that there needs to be some attention focused back at the Minneapolis Urban League to find out what the heck they're doing. Again, our number is 877-572-4288. We have about 10 minutes to go here, but getting back to that, Mr. Edwards, I don't understand what the Minneapolis Urban League's mission is at this point, other than they should lock the doors and chain them, because they are not effective. They have not addressed anything. Just like at the beginning of a show, when you get a girl or son who's been the son has been beat up by the Minneapolis police, they don't even bother to call the Urban League. Okay.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely correct.
Called the Urban League, and it just doesn't happen anymore. They haven't spoke on anything, unemployment. I mean, after the Star Tribune, the optimal thing to do, as you know already, Mr. Edwards, is that if there's a problem with education, if the mainstream white paper is coming out telling us that unemployment is down, it's great, everybody's happy, shouldn't there be some kind of automatic mechanism that shoots a light bulb off in the heads of the people at the Urban League to, hey, we need to call a press conference because this is not true. This is the reality of what's going on. There's no one doing that. And right now, they don't have any money, but they still have their voice. I mean, they can talk, I should say. They don't really have a voice, but they can talk. And why don't they use that free mechanism to call all the media outlets and get them out there in front of the Urban League and say, hey, the president of the Urban League is going to have a press conference, and you need to deflate what's being said about the education, the unemployment rate, these school contracts going every which way but loose to folks that can't read. And so,
well, Don, maybe they need a PR firm. You know what I'm saying? So I really don't know. You know, first of all, the Urban League doesn't have the money. They don't have the money in the budget, what budget's left, to do those kinds of things. So unless somebody's going to come in for free, for gratis, and do it, they don't have the resources to do that. You know, maybe the Star Tribune or the Kohl's Communications Company or somebody will give them a grant for $25,000 or $50,000. Maybe they can do it like that. I don't know. But I can appreciate what you're saying, but the problem is they don't have the assets anymore. They don't have the assets. They can't pay for that.
Well, you know, the chairman of the board, Mr. Al McFarland, has a big media empire himself. I mean, why isn't he addressing this? You know, why is he continuing?
Oh, that's right. That's right. He is the chairman of record now. And you're right, he does have a big empire, if you will. Maybe he can get the story out for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, of course, that means what story, what particular story, because you have to give some priority to the multiplicity of things that are in play in your community and within your organization. But, hey, I know that they can figure that out. You know what I mean? I assume that they can. You know, because we have to start getting ready for their. Oh, that's right. They didn't have an annual dinner last year, did they? But anyway, this year. But you know, got to get ready for the annual dinner probably in April or that fundraiser. You know, they put those cards on your table and tell you to make the donation because they are. Well, you know what, Don? They're a membership organization now, and so they should be able to solicit, like the church is doing tomorrow. You know, 100, 150, 200,000 from the membership. Shouldn't
they? They should, Mr. Edwards, but you know, in 2008, they had, right when Clarence Hightower left, they had about 300 people on their mailing list, and then late 2009, that dwindled down to 125, and the beginning of, very beginning of 2010, it went to under 100. So if you don't have people maintaining those relationships and doing what they need to do, and instead of every now and then running to these hip-hop internet sites and putting stuff up there for the Minneapolis Urban League, I mean, you don't have those people that look at those sites don't have any money to send $25, $50, $100, $200, $500 to Minneapolis Urban League because they're not working. They're partying on Friday and Saturday night. Okay.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, that's well, maybe they have some operation, that 1600 address you gave 4 or 5 weeks ago, phone number for their offices up on 16th and I don't know if what was that, Queen or Newton or Morgan. Did you ever find out what that office was?
You know, I need to go by there. It's 2220 16th Avenue North, 55411. And I've never, you know what, we got a few minutes here. Maybe I could just dial that number again and see if anybody answers the phone. Because it's really weird to have a Urban League listing on Google on the first page for the Minneapolis.
Yeah, dial it up. Dial up the number. Dial it up.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to do that. Let me just see if I can get that going here. The call failed or was not answered, and that's probably because I left the little signs in here. Let me take all these little extra things out of the number and get up on the studio call board and let's dial it here.
Hello?
What's that weird sound in the background? Is that a computer link up or what? Jeez,
that's
the normal sound sometimes you get when you're on a computer when somebody calls you.
Yeah, they said no answer on that thing there. No answer at all.
Wow, is that right? Wow. Oh, well, maybe we'll find out at some point in time in history what that particular office. You say you've been by it because I've gone by it. I don't see anything that looks like an office at that address in that particular area. Those are all houses up in there.
Yeah, it's right down, you know, you go down Penn and you can either go to 16th. You know, it could possibly be, you know what, Mr. Edwards, I think I figured this out.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm looking at a map, a live Google map as we speak. Let me just get there. Let me just make a satellite image here. Okay.
Uh-huh.
This is where the Urban League Jobs Network is, the official jobs board of the National Urban League and National Urban League members is what it's saying here. If you take,
On Google.
If you take a left on 16th, going north on Penn, there's a little school there, the Urban League School.
Okay.
Okay, that little school they have across from the bigger school that's closer to, what is that, Russell?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and so that building there, the little school across the street from the big school, is where, this is really funny now because now I'm getting it. What someone did was they bookmarked that address as the main address for the Minneapolis Urban League rather than 2100 Plymouth Avenue North. These guys don't have the common sense enough to know to even look at that. And if someone came here and didn't know about the Minneapolis Urban League, they Google it and they go right to that address.
I see. Okay. Yeah, right. If you Google it, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's self-explanatory then. So it's really not a functional site because the Urban League schools and everything have kind of been closed down for a while, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. Not much. It's
Yeah. Well, boy, what a mystery. If we still had Alfred Hitchcock around, we could have put him on this. He could have made a movie out of it.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, okay. Say, by the way, I heard a doctor on a program on, because you mentioned the name at the very top of the program. Is that individual the husband of a local commentator at the Urban? Is that right? I was hearing the same name correctly.
Yes, you were. It was Dr. or Mr. Jonathan Lofgren, who is the husband of KMOJ's Lissa Jones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I guess I didn't remember hearing that declaration made over the air, though.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It's not made when checks are being cut either.
Jones.
So it's not Lissa Jones when the checks are cut. It's Lissa Lofgren. So,
People
catch on. You know, they think that, you know, some people are slow. We're not just that slow.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, because we're down about the last minute and a half now. Is the Minneapolis Foundation going to be issuing that's right. Somebody told me that the Minneapolis Foundation, somebody who's very much in the corporate arena, they said the Minneapolis Foundation is not going to issue anything until next year sometime.
Yeah, they said the next round is going to be 2012 because I think they realize that, I mean, the blunt of it, Mr. Edwards, on this tornado and this recovery stuff has not hit the Minneapolis Foundation yet. That's why they're sidestepping and dabbling in the civil rights stuff and the disparity stuff, and they're trying to cover up and cover their butt. But this thing is going, when it hits, it's going to hit hard. A lot of folks are going to fall like trees in the forest.
Well, here's the reason I ask the question as we reach closure here. In August, they told the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder and Mr. Hallman that they would be issuing a report on the 15th of September, and then there was something that showed up on the 17th of October and then published on the 19th of October. I thought we were told that that was the report, but that wasn't the report. Is that correct?
No, that was not the report, Mr. Edwards. That was the report from the NCRT, their mid-grant report, which was totally bogus as far as I'm concerned. Well, we have about 15 seconds left. And we
okay, all right. Well, we'll be back and visiting with our listeners next Saturday. All right, Don, let's take it home.